Coming up next, Bathrobe Spear's Broadsides with the Bathrobe Spear Robert Norse, and you will be in touch with and under the cover of The Robe for the next 2 hours on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. So stay tuned to your dial, get close to your telephone. Call-in number is 427-3772. And we are going to have some hot talk. We're going to have some hot guests. We're going to have some hefty call-ins. Hopefully you'll be one of those call-ins. It's about civil rights for the poor. It's about the situation in Santa Cruz. We're going to talk about demonstrations downtown for civil rights for the poor. We're going to talk about Citizens Committee for the Homeless's violation of the November 29th agreement with the open-air shelter. We're going to talk about the fate of the new Brighton State Beach campers. Stay tuned. It's December 25th, 1995. This is a transcript of a meeting between Daryl Darling, Community House Director, and Palmer So, the open-air shelter manager, both employees of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, in a deal, contract, and agreement they made with the campers of the Coral Street open-air shelter on November 29th, 1995. You'll first hear quotes from those men outlining the deal, and after that you'll hear the entire tape to give you a context in which those quotes were said. The tape is rather lengthy, a lot of it is irrelevant, but the documentary record is here made available. My name is Robert Norse. I'm a community activist with a group called Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I was present throughout the conversation, and I was the man recording the conversation. The conversation took place at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, 113 Coral Street, at Highway 1 and Highway 9, under the awning, since destroyed, of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter while it existed. The deal that was made, as I understood it, was this. Campers would have until January 1st, or whenever the community house building permit was granted, which was then uncertain, but now, of course, is January 25th, is the first Planning Commission date for that permit hearing. That would be the date at which campers would be warned that they would have 10 days to vacate the property. The exception to that would be if there were unusually unseasonable rains, inclement weather that made the field uninhabitable and then required, and this is the important point, a renegotiation of the entire understanding with the campers living there. That was my understanding of the deal. The next voice you hear will be that of Daryl Darling defining the contract that was made.
Okay. If we can, as long as the weather holds out, January 1st, no sooner than January 1st, actually, what we're talking about is 10 days, no sooner than January 1st, right? And beyond January 1st, 10 days after the release of permits.
A few minutes later, I asked Daryl a question, and he responded in the following manner, restating the contract.
It's done. That wouldn't require moving everybody out to do the cleanup like on the second.
Just clean out your chairs.
Evidently, Bob didn't understand what the agreement is. Would you tell Bob what the agreement is?
Volunteer.
The whole thing, because evidently,
I heard something
you misunderstood. We are not going to be displacing anyone. The status quo. Until January, no earlier than January 1st, and after January 1st, no earlier than 10 days after permits are released. Okay?
Okay, that's good to hear.
Then the condition of the weather was raised by Camper and responded to by Project Director Paul Marceau.
Unless the weather comes in before
the
that's my problem. That really makes
sense. We have a volunteer staff here. The worst day of working for this is
I have
been able to have my concerns satisfied that if it really gets messy and we get rains like we did last year, which I hope we'll never do, then we have to sit down and look at the field, see what the options are. We'll just talk about it.
And the council has, even the three votes.
The understanding, as those of us who were there heard it, was that there would then be a discussion if the weather was so unusually harsh over such a long period that it required a renegotiation. Daryl Darling went on to state that though city council members had their doubts about the winter open-air shelter, specifically Scott Kennedy, that they would nonetheless go with the decision of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. This had not been the case. If city council members had essentially said that what the Citizens Committee for the Homeless was doing was worthless, the campers would have been uninterested in hearing what the Citizens Committee for the Homeless had to say, because they would have had no bargaining power. But Daryl Darling indicated the city council would go along with this, and at no time has the city council really crossed the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. So in fact, he was correct. It was the Citizens Committee for the Homeless that made the decision to either keep open or close the open-air shelter. Here is Daryl Darling speaking.
The council has, even the three votes, one of the three, for certain, that would be virtually guaranteed friendly votes on anything that's reasonable for the campsite. Once it rains, Scott has made it clear, and he's an honorable and very forthright person. He does not, he'll go with our consensus on what's safe and unsafe. But he won't, he's already said, it's raining and inclement, this is not a place that we can, the city would consider to be.
If we can get the tents off that lower end,
campers then discussed what to do in the event of rain, how to deal with the field, which traditionally becomes quite wet in the rainy season. Paul Marceau made his own suggestions.
Yeah.
Because we'd all be up on higher ground.
Okay.
Well, some of this water down. You know, one of the things that would be helpful, I think, and I'll just throw this out for your consideration, after the armory opens on Sunday, some people are going to move and go to the armory. I'm not big on this, but just for appearance's sake, if you're getting people to move tents, those who are left, move them upfield so they're not all over
You've got to come to higher ground so we can work on the lower ground.
You realize we live out here, we know you've got to go to higher ground.
Well, that's really all we wanted to talk with you, because we know, you know.
Yeah. Well, if we ever had a big city in the middle, I think we'd get a hell of a lot further.
A few moments later, Daryl Darling reiterated the agreement that had been made.
No sooner than January 1st will we be moving. We'll review together as the weather unfolds, and beyond January 1st, no sooner than 10 days after permits are released. You have our word on that, and I'm confident the board will support that.
And that was the November 29th voice of Daryl Darling, Community House Director, employee of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I'm told he gets a $28,000 a year salary for that job. I'm not quite sure. Perhaps someone can verify that for me.
He and Paul Marceau, head of the open-air shelter, were given negotiating power by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board to do a deal with the campers, Save Our Shelters, who were living at the open-air street shelter at Coral Street. And the deal was, you can stay there until January 1st or later if the community house permit, the trailers project permit, is not granted. And of course, since that hearing doesn't come up till January 25th, obviously it wasn't. And so actually the offer extended into February. And also it was a 10-day grace period after the deadline of January 1st or the community house permit hearing granting. So Daryl Darling gave that word to the campers, of course, with the proviso that the field was not flooded. Now, I invite any member of the public to walk down to that field to see if it's flooded. It has not been flooded. There was some water there for about a day and a half after the first big storm, and after that, there was nothing. No, the storm was used, in my opinion, as a pretext to close the camp in blatant violation of the agreement, because the agreement also stated that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, Paul Marceau, the head of the shelter, would not act unilaterally. He would negotiate with the campers if there was a reason for him to be concerned about conditions on the field. He did no such thing. He called in the big guns. He called in council member Scott Kennedy, who, standing behind him, used the threat of force to remove campers from the only legal place for people to sleep in Santa Cruz, the only legal open-air shelter in the country, according to Celia Scott's information, as revealed yesterday at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Executive Board meeting. We're going to be talking more about that. I'm going to be inviting your calls. You do give a call here. Our phone lines are open, and if for some reason I don't seem to be answering, it's because I've gone blind, or I have the phone on mute, which means that phone blinks here rather than rings, and so I have to really keep a close eye on it. And at this point, I'll ask my studio guest here, Joe the Naz, or Joe Nazworthy, as he's known to the IRS. Joe, too. You keep an eye on the phone for me, too, so if I start screwing up, maybe you can say, hey, it's blinking. Joe, I ran into you, about 3 or 4 days ago in Scotts Valley. You were having a cup of coffee near Felton. The roasting company. Sign in. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what's happening with you.
Hello, my name's Joe the Naz. I was invited here this morning to be a guest on this show. During my visit, I'd like to share a little insight and information on and for the homeless in our community. And it's like Robert was saying here, any questions or comments, you can call our hotline at 427-3772. I've heard city officials talking about Santa Cruz being a magnet for homeless people, that they receive too much help here, but nothing could be less true. In Marin, and they have a shelter there that they'll shelter you, and if you get Social Security, they have you take half of your check and make a money order out to yourself, and they put it in a safe for you. And after 2 or 3 months, you have enough money saved up for first and last so that you can get your own apartment.
Now, before you continue, Joe, and I'm going to ask you to really go into some detail since you have a lot of notes here and I want to hear more about this. Let me ask you, how long have you been in the Santa Cruz area?
I've been here since 1969.
And are you currently now in a house? Are you outside? What's your situation?
I was homeless, but now I have a house up in Felton that I share with my brother.
And how long were you homeless in Santa Cruz?
On and off for... I was homeless, I was a runaway when I was 15, 16. I was homeless for about a year, and then I was homeless again in 1985.
Now, where are you from originally?
California.
And what made you decide to stay in Santa Cruz? Was it the wonderful homeless services here?
Not at all. It's just that Santa Cruz is my home, and my friends are here. And I did not know any other place to go. That's why I was talking about Marin and in San Francisco and what kind of services they have there for the homeless, so that people that do live here know there's alternatives, that this isn't the only place in the world.
Now, do you, Joe, speak from experience or from information that you gained from other people or from information you gained from third sources? Where did your information come from?
A lot of it about San Francisco and Marin comes from my brother, because he was homeless there, and he asked me to take some notes down and and tell you about them.
Can you hear Free Radio Santa Cruz up in Felton, where your brother is? Is he listening to us now?
Yes, I hope he is, but I'm not sure if he can get the station up there or not. I'll have to find out. I have to give him a call.
Well, if you are, what's your brother's name?
John.
Well, John, if you're listening, you know, we invite you to call in and amplify on Joe's treatment of what the situation is in San Francisco and Marin. Again, the number here is 427-3772, and that invitation is extended to everyone listening. Again, this is your show. We're here to talk to you, hopefully, rather than to talk at you, because the point is for all of us to get information out together to come to some kind of understanding of what's really happening here in Santa Cruz, and indeed in the broader community in Santa Cruz County. But I interrupted you, Joe, in the midst of your discussion of contrasting Marin, San Francisco, and Santa Cruz.
Yes. The reason why I'm bringing it up is, like my brother was telling me, there's a lot more services in San Francisco. If you're going to be homeless, they'll help you there. Where in this town they won't. In this town they just want you to leave. You know, they look the other way. They you know, you're not even looked at as a citizen. It doesn't matter if you've lived here since 1969 like I have. When I was homeless, I might as well have been from Egypt, you know. They just didn't care. No, you know, they don't care if you're from here.
Did I pay you to come on the air and say this?
No, you didn't.
Did I recruit you and say, hey, I need somebody who's going to be a big critic of Mike Rotkin and the wonderful homeless services in Santa Cruz? Did I do that?
Not at all. This is the first time I've been on the radio in my life.
Do we know each other? Am I secretly dating your sister? I mean, what's going on here?
No. Like you said, I met you in Felton in front of the Mountain Roasting Company, and we exchanged a few words, and I left a message on your machine, and you invited me to be a guest on your show.
And by the way, that invitation extends to critics all the way to the extreme right end of the spectrum, including Mayor Mike Rotkin, who's been on our show. He was actually on our show, I guess it was a week ago today, and I'd like to apologize for not giving our listeners the kind of detailed analysis of the Rotkin, what we're going to call it, the Rotkin rattle along, the Rotkin rub-a-dub-dub, the Rotkin smokescreen that we got on Friday. I guess Mike's in the paper again today. If you look at today's Santa Cruz Urinal, that is to say what they call the Sentinel, the county newspaper, you'll see Mike saying that campers are just going to have to move along little doggies on January 1st. That's the new Brighton Beach campers. And, of course, the new Brighton Beach campers, of whom we have one shortly to be in the studio and possibly two or three, we are hoping that those campers can get down here. It's quite a ways to come, and the weather is not the best outside, as you can see by looking out the window. It's raining. They're not the only people that are impacted by Mayor Mike's proclamations and declamations and decrees. His statement that the campers at New Brighton Beach on January 1st can either run for cover, get out of town, or try to get into the armory and the church program is typical. Mike has been saying for a decade that there's no problem with homeless people in this community. Why don't you activists go to Capitola and demonstrate? The law that makes the act of sleeping after 11 o'clock at night a crime is a fine law, which he supports. That if he tried to modify that law, he would be kicked out of office. He said all these things repeatedly again and again and again. But the reality remains that there are hundreds and hundreds of homeless people who tonight will not have a legal place to be, who will have to worry about being harassed, ticketed, or jailed by a police officer of the Santa Cruz Police Department, an employee of the Parks and Rec Department, the City Parks and Rec, or hassled by deputies from the county. Because even though it is legal to sleep in most parts of the county, the deputies act as though it weren't, and they misinform people regularly on that basis. Or such was their policy when we were investigating this some years back, and I've heard of no change in their policy. Maybe under Sheriff Mark Tracy we'll have a change. That would be a nice thing. Let me get back to you. Do you have any comments on anything I'm saying that kind of rings a bell, Naz? Or should I call you Joe or Naz?
Call me Joe.
I'll call you Joe. All right, Joe, go ahead.
Sorry, what was the question?
Oh, the question is, has anything I've been saying run? And you can, of course, continue with what you're discussing, or if you have some thoughts on what I've been saying, I'd like to hear about that.
Well, All I can really say is when I was homeless in this town, my hometown, staying at the satellite program, which they called it back then, was probably the most traumatic part of being homeless.
What year was that, Joe?
That was 1985. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you feel less than human. I mean, I didn't look forward to it at all. And they took you to a church where, you know, they gave you a mat and a blanket, and you and others would, you know, sack out, and then they'd boot you out at 5:30 in the morning. Now, if I had a dog, of course, I couldn't do that, you know, but at the time I didn't have a dog.
And that is still the case, folks. Watch the dogs die on January 1st. I guess that's going to be the watchword of Mayor Mike Rodkin. Dead dogs, or maybe we're all dead ducks. I'm not sure which. Go ahead.
A man's best friend. When you're homeless, your dog doesn't ask for much, you know, just a little bit of food and a little bit of compassion, and they give back far more compassion than a lot of these city officials in Santa Cruz, that's for sure.
Hey,
I'm afraid that, yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting, some people may accuse us of special pleading here because we're, you know, we're pulling out the violins and the dogs, but, you know, if you are outside, you cannot use indoor shelter if you have a pet. If you want to be in a couple, you cannot go in an indoor shelter and remain a family or a group. If you're living in a vehicle, unless you can get into the special exception to the camping ban program in the church parking lots, and again, I would love to hear Paul Marceau give me a call and let me know. That's pardonnez-moi, Paul, the man who broke his word to the campers, who lied and violated the contract that had been made between the people who are occupying the open-air shelter and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, whom he represents. I would love to have that man, that responsible official, give me a call and tell me how many spaces are available for people in cars and vehicles to legally sleep at night. Because we continue, we continue to get reports of tickets from people in vehicles, tickets from people in the Pogonip. There continue to be harassment and fear in the homeless community at night because of, yes, you got it, Ordinance 6.36, the municipal code that states it is illegal to enter a state of unconsciousness after 11 o'clock at night. Now, if that isn't a status crime, I sure don't know what is. Go ahead, Joe, with what you're saying.
Oh, I'd also like to say that here in Santa Cruz, the rent is really high, and a lot of people that get checks, welfare, or Social Security, they hardly have any money left over to live on. So a lot of the times people think that, well, I'll just move out and live into my van and I'll have all this money left over to live on. You think that would be a good idea? Well, it's not. It's not because of you can be ticketed for illegal camping, your van or your camper could break down, and you might not have the money to fix it, then you get parking tickets, you might get a boot on it. It's a lot of responsibility these days to own a vehicle with insurance and keeping it tagged up and smogged, and a lot of people think that it's a way of being able to supplement their, have more money to live on, and in the long run they would be better off just paying the high rent and keeping their house. I made the same mistake myself, and then when I lost my vehicle, I was out on the streets without anything.
It's really kind of a landlord's paradise here in Santa Cruz as far as high rents go, and I'd hoped to have activist Billy Queeley in the studio. Unfortunately, he has not shown up, nor has that that man about the courthouses, Capricorn, who's a black man who has been fighting doggedly and determinedly, literally dozens and dozens of court appearances on different matters affecting poor people, which he was going to bring to the attention of our listenership here. And unfortunately, he too has not yet shown. But who knows? These folks may show, or they may be, who knows? They may have been arrested for sleeping illegally. You never can tell. I think actually Capricorn is living indoors, and so is Billy at the moment. But if they're within range of the station and listening, please give a call, and this includes you, whoever you are. If you have something you want to say to us about what we're saying here, positive, negative, or otherwise, give a call to 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. So I'm talking to Joe Nasworthy, who's describes himself as a man native to Santa Cruz. He describes himself, he's a man who's been here for 2 decades. He lives with his brother now. And he took the initiative to get on this show. I handed him a flyer 4 or 5 days ago about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless board meeting yesterday. That's the group that is evicting campers with one hand, and with the other hand raking in money in the name of the homeless. Check it out. He was interested in that particular meeting. He wasn't able to make that meeting, so instead he decided to come on the show. And he also was interested, I think you were interested, in the Java House situation and the situation of discrimination against homeless people at restaurants downtown. Yes,
we talked about that a little. We talked about that a little bit, but what compelled me to come here is things that I read in the Santa Cruz Sentinel that from people that have never been homeless in their life, making comments, homeless by choice, and making comments that are absolutely not true, and they have no idea how traumatic it is to be homeless and how it can really affect a person's thinking, mental health, not to mention physical health. And it snowballs. It's an easy hole to get into and very, very hard to get out of. It was really hard for me to get out of being a homeless person. I have a house now up in Felton, like Robert was saying, was my brother. But it wasn't easy. It took a lot of saving it's just, like I said, it's just really a hard situation to get out of. And what I read in the paper, people that just don't know what they're talking about, you know. They've never been there. And they think that homeless people have it easy here. And it's not true at all. It's not true at all. Santa Cruz is a very, very hard place to get by in, especially in the winters. Winters in Santa Cruz are extremely harsh and cold and wet. And if you have no place to lay your head at night, you're in big trouble.
Couldn't agree with you more, Joe, although I myself, as I must point out, I live in a room. I don't live in a tent or on the ground or under a bridge like some other people I know. Looks like a new guest is arriving. I want to kind of give a little orientation here because I'm expecting a phone call from Backburner Bob Campbell. Bob Campbell, hey, all right, the New Brighton State Beach contingent has arrived. The River Street refugees are on hand. Oh, boy, they're taking over the studio, I think. Oh, wait, oh!
All right, we got you now.
Boy, that was a close one. I escaped. Back. All right. No. All kidding aside, folks, actually, we have an incoming phone call even before my orientation, so we'll try and orient and talk to the phone at the same time.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, hello. This is Robert Norris.
Yes, and this sounds like Backburner Bob, perhaps?
Yes, hello. How are you?
You're Bob Campbell, are you not?
I am.
And, I'm okay. How are you doing, Bob?
Pretty good. Calling about what you guys are talking about.
You've been listening to us on the air?
Off and on for the last, whatever it is, half an hour almost.
That's great. Well, you, Bob, have been sort of at the on the firing end of our guns. I remember trying to occupy one of your kitchens once in 1990. Well, you had two kitchens, one at Pioneer House and one at the River Street Shelter. You ran those two programs for a number of years, right?
Yes. 5 years, something like that. 4 years.
So you are what I would have called a poverty pimp.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
It's great to have that kind of accolade, you know. It's not often people appreciate my work.
Well, I try to give credit where credit is due. And in fact, however, and you yourself have been attacked by homeless people for, in fact, enforcing the camping ban around Pioneer House or asking people to move when they were sleeping outside there. I'm going through the negative stuff first of all so I could point out that you seem to be a man who is not entirely a constant rah-rah for homeless activists.
Not always.
You've been on the other end of the spectrum.
Yes.
But you, for the last few years, you've been doing other things, right?
I have.
And what are you doing these days?
Oh, I'm just working as an administrator up at university, up at UCSC these days.
I see. Many homeless people running around the campus, avoiding the campus police up there, perhaps?
I haven't seen any.
Oh, good. Well, perhaps they're properly staying out of sight, or perhaps, as Mike Watkin suggests, there just aren't that many homeless people around.
Could be. Could be a tolerance factor. might be a little more tolerance there than in the city.
Although, interestingly enough, we did have a man who was an employee of a security service downtown who slept on the UCSC campus, which is most of which is technically part of Santa Cruz, and UCSC has passed its own camping ban law, apparently, for the jurisdiction of the campus, and he was pursued and targeted under that law, and he actually lost his job as a consequence of his homeless status. But I bet this isn't what you called about at all.
Well, I was thinking about the campground behind the shelter there, what we used to call the Back 40. I guess it's now the Community House campground.
The Coral Street, the Community House locked field at the moment, but it was the Coral Street open air shelter.
Yeah.
So you what about that piece of property?
Well, I had a curious conversation, or at least kind of a conversation, at the Citizens Committee board meeting last night. I was curious about their ability to run a shelter there. Well, actually, what I said is that if there were some group that was interested in running the campground on a temporary basis behind the shelter, essentially as it was before people were moved to New Brighton, would that be possible? And I got a number of different responses, one of which is that I think it was one of the board members saying that there was not any permit there.
And that's what Mike Rotkin told the people who were remaining on the campground on December 16th, that there had been no permit for the entire year and a half, which the camp had been operating since October 1994, and that somehow that meant that he suddenly had to close it, or actually he didn't close it, that suddenly it could not be, the decision of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to close it could not be changed because there had been no permit, which sounded strange to me because they had been operating without a permit up to then. There was no apparent reason why they couldn't continue.
And then, so without a permit, and with the city ordinance against camping, and with the visibility of the campground, it was curious to me that the city council or the Santa Cruz Police Department hadn't done anything about the campground being there if there wasn't some implicit agreement that it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I was suggesting that under that implicit agreement about camping actually being okay behind the campground and the Citizens Committee's concern that they didn't really have money to fund the project on a continuing basis, if there were a group that had some money or could get some money to fund it on a temporary basis, even if the money only was kind of a week-to-week thing,
mm-hmm.
Would it be possible?
Would the Citizens Committee, in essence, permit another group to step in and say, okay, for those people who need that campground, who are downtown sleeping under bridges out at night after 11 o'clock without a place to be, can they come to that campground again as they have for the last year and a half?
Yeah, and try to work out some kind of sublease to a group that would want to do that.
And I believe Karen Gillette of the Homeless Community Resource Center, although she has certainly not agreed to do this, she has said that she will bring a proposal to her board of directors if a site is found and if some kind of proposal can be worked out. She also cautioned that her kind of management of the campground would be of a tighter sort than that of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless under, pardonnez-moi, Paul Merceau, as I call him. And interestingly enough, the background to this meeting you were at, which I was also at, which I tape-recorded to no avail because the machine was too low, but luckily it's been videotaped by two video cameras. This meeting of the board, which happens once a month, in which I have faithfully tried to bring up this issue for the last 3 months. What are you going to do when these damn trailers that are coming in for 48 lucky people displace 200? And two, what about the situation in the winter for people who need shelter in the winter, you know, who need to be able to pitch a tent or lay down a sleeping bag in the winter? I continue to, this is very simple questions, which the Citizens Committee has regularly ignored and refused to discuss. At this particular meeting, you may remember, I tried to bring up the issue of a deal made between Daryl Darling and Paul Merceau, both employees of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, with Save Our Shelters, the open-air shelter campground group that had really become more permanent in terms of weatherizing their tents and so forth, and they refused to let me play the promise that was made, at which point Paul Lee, the head of the Citizens Committee, the man who was chairing the thing, in his jaunty beret, broke up the meeting.
I was there. I saw that.
It was all happening. And then I must admit, I raised my voice. I became rather irate at that situation. I want to point out that we have other guests in the studio. I'd like you to talk to them at the same time, and maybe you can continue what you're saying.
Well, let me just, I did a little bit. I had a conversation with Daryl Darling outside the door of the meeting last night after...
Daryl Darling, the director of the Community House Million Dollar Trailer Project?
Yeah, and he was talking that they had actually gotten some funding for running the campground last year.
Uh-huh.
Just an interest in the end of it.
They did, from the Above the Line Community Consortium and other people. It's true.
So, I was just doing a few numbers, and let's say that, if what you would need is probably around $947 a week to run the place, if you're going to pay somebody $10 an hour, 10 hours a day to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there might be some ways of running it a little less expensively than that.
I think we figured out it was like $500 a month if you don't pay it and run it on volunteers and just have porta potty pickups and trash dumps.
Yeah, that sounds close. So, mm-hmm. it's a matter of my biggest argument when I was actually working for the shelter and for supportive outreach services there was that there was no one taking responsibility for anything that was kind of happening on the back 40 there.
No, I noticed the same attitude last night. Paul Lee, who headed this group, was saying to us that it was the city that closed down the open-air shelter, when in fact all of us know that it was a trespass complaint by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and their decision made by Paul Merceau, who actually admitted it later in the
board was not involved in, that nobody was involved in the decision but him.
But yeah, Paul Merceau, what I'm saying is that Lee was disingenuous as usual. He refused to take responsibility for it since he wants to pose as the great friend of the homeless people. Let me say at this moment that I don't particularly recommend this field. The New Brighton State Beecher people are not interested in this field, but as far as I'm concerned, since it's the only place in Santa Cruz right now that is there for people to use, where it's right next to homeless services, it's right next to lockers and running water and such, that it is a place that it should be open for some people to use if they want to use it. It's not being used. The community house trailers aren't there. They won't be there till February. I see no reason why it can't be opened again, if necessary, on donated funds. I mean, but this Citizens Committee is adamant. They want their trailer project to proceed. They want that area locked off. And so I want to make it clear that I am not speaking in any way for any particular homeless group. This is just Robert Norris, an observer in the situation, saying that I have heard from some homeless people they'd like the field open, but in terms of the people you're going to be hearing in the studio, and we have a number of them, we have Billy and Stanley and Dan from the campground.
And also Greg.
Hi, Greg. Who are going to be talking about the very particular concerns and new negotiating position of their group, which I believe is called by some the River Street Refugees. I don't think Mayor Rackin wants to call it anything at all. He just wants to dismiss it from his mind. But let me get back to this meeting, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting yesterday, since I want to kind of get this out of the way and also get your sense of it. They're going to be also in the news in the next month because they're going to be applying for federal funding to put in these 10 donated trailers from Standard, which will serve 48 people at a cost of around $1 million a year, including initial installation, as I understand it. Actually, it's $1.3 million, and then I heard it's $800,000. I'm getting a little confused about the figures, so I'm putting it halfway between those two figures. Also, it's supposed to serve only 48 people at a cost of $200 to $600 a month, and these are going to be drug and alcohol-free people, and right next to a free meal, which is open to everybody, pot smokers, heroin users, as it should be. But it's certainly a strange place to cite a drug-free transitional housing program. And in order to do this, in order to continue this funding, they are, and this is my opinion, they have broken their deal, which was a very clear recorded deal, which I played at the beginning of this hour, in a somewhat crackly tape, for which I apologize, which states there will be no movement of the open-air shelter to close it until 10 days after permits are granted, unless there is negotiated agreement between the campers and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless if there were serious weather problems. And anyway, we were both at this meeting yesterday, as were a number of campers trying to raise points. And I'm going to give them, William Walker, who was in the midst of raising a point when Paul Lee closed the meeting, because I was also trying to get this one-minute tape played. Didn't get to have his point raised, and hoping some of the New Brighton Beach campers will raise those points that he was unable to raise. But your point, as I remember at the meeting yesterday, was, you know, as you said already, why can't another group raise the money and do this? And, you know, and the answer you said, Celia Scott said, well, you haven't got a permit or some such thing?
Well, there was, a concern of no permit. There was a concern that it would be temporary and not permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a concern that how it would hamper the forward movement of establishing community house there.
Right.
So it seems to me that the permit issue has not been an issue for more than a year while the campaign has been going on. So that seems more of a non-issue than
right.
an issue.
It's an issue because they want to make it an issue. It's an excuse.
And the lack of funding from the Citizens Committee, I mean, the lack of permanence of it seems kind of odd in that until there's something permanent, there's usually something temporary, and that
then they come first.
My experience of people who are almost about how they vision their situation is that they have the courage to deal with a number of temporary things while they're searching for more permanent solutions to whatever it is they're looking for. I'm willing to temporarily stay somewhere until I get to be someplace else, or I'm temporarily willing to do this until I can do that. Not that much different than myself, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that not being permanent is a non-issue, at least for that site for this time. And then the issue of the forward movement of the community house project itself, my understanding is that that's been underway for about 6 years at this point, and adequate funding has not been found for it.
That's correct.
And I did a little review of some board minutes of the community house that says that even after they get the money to put it up, they're going to need approximately $320,000 a year in operating money, of which only about $200,000 is covered by rent and fundraising of some sort. So there's some deficit of almost $120,000 a year in operating funds once they get the money to put the thing in place.
Maybe
I wonder
Paul
where
Lee
that's coming from.
Paul Lee may make a donation from his recent inheritance, perhaps?
Well, the long term, if you will, is that I think realistically, other than having to find some place to put the trailers while they're putting this together, is that community house is still quite a piece distance down the road.
And it was exactly the same line used by the Citizens Committee in 1991 when they, in October, cleared the field of people again, arrested us, those of us who stayed, and closed the property for the winter. They claimed they were going to be building community house in January, and they needed everybody off the property in order to prepare the site. Well, they never built. People were, of course, driven into the bushes and given innumerable tickets for the winter, and I was pursued in court for 6 months around that issue. And I guess, you know, I really came to the Citizens Committee yesterday thinking, let's find a way out of this. Paul Marceau has made a bad choice in closing the open-air shelter. And again, this is completely independent from the situation of the new Brighton Beach campers, who are seeking actually a much broader and probably much better solution, both for themselves and for the wider homeless community, and looking for a park that is really in an appropriate place, a camping area where there is, you know, it's a humanized, livable spot that's not next to a cement factory, a freeway, and so forth. I'm not saying that the open-air shelter is completely unlivable. Obviously, it's not. But it certainly is not the most desirable place. But I guess I came hoping that the Citizens Committee could say, look, we hear Paul Marceau and Daryl Darling promising to keep this campground open until February, in essence, unless there is a renegotiated agreement. And there was no renegotiation. So let's tell Paul, look, Paul, you erred on this matter. Reopen the campground at least until, you know, the community house trailers can be put there. Or there's some real flood conditions. Help those who want to be there deal with the situation and set up their tents, or at least to discuss the issue seriously.
Especially, I mean, because the people have until Monday before they're illegally camping again.
Well, again, I wasn't talking for the people at New Brighton Beach. The people at New Brighton Beach have really kind of decided that they aren't interested in going back to that place, even if it is open. But
yeah.
I don't want to speak for them. Actually, here's a camper. Hang on, who's going to speak for them. On the air is Billy. Hi, Billy.
Hi, Robert. Bob, as simple as this, we want to make progress
not digress or regress, okay? Yeah. We don't want to go back to that spot. That was a bad spot in the first place because there wasn't proper water runoff. There was a problem with the porta potties and the trash removal. We are in a situation now where we have just barely over 48 hours
right.
before we're forced into an illegal situation. Now, we're doing our best to come up with a plausible or reasonable solution for somewhere that we can go and still be legal.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there's,
yep.
see, there's no disputing that. But my concern is that I was concerned that property be open for anyone, and there are plenty of people downtown and around who need it, particularly during the day, and it's a place for people to be. There should be a place, like, in essence, you can park a tent for a shelter, as has happened for the last year there. And Billy is completely right. Of course, the porta potty situation could have been remedied by Citizens Committee if they'd had adequate porta potties. The situation could have been dealt with, and the campers a month ago were willing to deal with it on that site at that time. And much has happened since then. But there are people who I believe want to use that property, and the Citizens Committee has promised that property. So I'm not I'm opposing this to the New Brighton Beach proposal. I am saying that the Citizens Committee has an obligation to open this regardless of what happens at New Brighton Beach. And what do you think about that idea, Billy?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Robert. It's as simple as this. Like I said, we don't, as a general consensus for the group of us that are out at New Brighton, we don't want to go back. Okay? Now, we, at one point, while we were still at the Coral Street shelter area,
uh-huh.
had volunteered our own laborers to dig little trenches and ditches, whatever, on the outside of the fences for proper water runoff, and we were essentially denied the right to do that to make our living situation better. What's up?
Very good question. Would you say, Billy, that the property should be open for those who do want to go back?
If there are people that still want to be there rather than to work with us, we are out at the